This morning's gospel, another one of these endlessly long Lenten gospels, and pity me who has to sing it, presents us with another big block of our Lord's teaching, and there is a great deal here. So I want to sort of skim the waves and touch on some of the main themes of this passage. And the first that comes to mind is the theme of darkness and light, which, as you know, is a major theme of John's gospel. Light and dark in John stand for sin and grace, for ignorance and wisdom, for fear and faith. And here we have a very obvious contrast between light and darkness. A man who has literally lived all of his life in darkness moves into the presence of the light of the world and asks for help. Now, at the outset, our Lord challenges and rejects a notion which lay at the heart of the Jewish moral system and is held even today by some Christians, I'm afraid to say, and that is that there is a direct cause and effect relationship between goodness and health on one hand and wickedness and ill fortune on the other. The notion that somehow the righteous always prosper and the wicked are always punished. And we know that is not true. Now, over the centuries, the Pharisees had broadened this idea to have a cause and effect relationship not only for one's own sin, but for the sins of one's family members. And that's why the Pharisees asked Jesus, "Who sinned, this man or his parents?" You know, as we said a couple weeks ago, the Pharisees had this sort of fundamentalist mindset that leads them into the error of thinking that they had life all pinned down, thinking that they had God all figured out. And we talked about Nicodemus, and we talked about the first words out of Nicodemus' mouth. "Rabbi, we know." Well, we had that again today. "We know," said the Pharisees. They had it all figured out. People suffered because they deserved to, or because their families deserved to. Remember, after 9/11, that font of wisdom, Jerry Falwell, opined that the 9/11 disaster took place because a sinful America deserved it. Some preachers will even today speak of cause and effect between sin in people's lives and the fact that they get sick or have accidents or die. And Jesus specifically rebukes this perverse view. "It was not that this man sinned or his parents," says Jesus. And then Jesus continues, "It was not that this man sinned, not that his parents sinned, but that the works of God might be manifest in him." Our Lord is reminding us here that while suffering of any kind is never good in and of itself, suffering can be turned to good purpose. There can be value in suffering, says Jesus. And he acted that teaching out by his own suffering on the cross. Now, I've seen hardship, terrible hardship, draw out of a person some very, very fine qualities and real strength. It can cause them to reevaluate, refocus on what is really important. It can lead them down different paths that they might not otherwise have taken. And suffering can draw the same qualities out of those around that person. And it's almost as if our Lord is saying, if you encounter suffering in your life, don't waste it. Far from being a punishment for sin, suffering can be an invitation to virtue and a real door opening in your life. Christians believe that suffering has meaning, because the suffering of a Christian is a way to share in the sufferings of Jesus. We have another important lesson in this gospel. When the man comes back from the pool, after he's moved from darkness to light, from blindness to sight, his neighbors didn't recognize him, some of them. Is that the man? No, but he's like him. Man says, I am he. The light changes our lives. Jesus ought to change us. Old patterns, old attitudes, old ways of thinking change because they aren't good enough anymore. And you'll note that the Pharisees, who had an investment in darkness, began to question the man and began to question him aggressively. He was different now. His experience did not fit into their neat, tidy compartments. And that made him a threat. What happened? I don't know. Who did this? I don't know who he is. Where is he? I don't know. What's so special about him? What gives him the right to upset people's lives? I don't know. All that that man knew was that the light was good. He once was blind, but now could see. He knew that his life was different, and he could trust that it would get better. You know, this is a beautifully crafted passage. The Pharisees, you'll notice, are trying to convince the man that what happened really wasn't good, that he should be leery and suspicious of it. And it would have been very easy for that man to agree with the Pharisees. Their arguments were cogent and consistent, at least from their fundamentalist mindset. His worked. They made good sense. All he can say is, I don't know. He could not give a convincing defense of what had happened. He didn't even try. In fact, all he knew was that whatever happened to him was good. And he didn't try to strip the moment of its mystery, to try and figure out God, to try and put God into a little box. Jesus didn't need to be explained. He just needed to be trusted. And then one final theme that I see in this gospel. And it's important because without this, none of what's gone before really makes any sense. Before the darkness came into the man's life, the man had to do something. He had to get up from where he was and go to where he had been sent and plunge in. And he had to do this with no guarantee of success, no proof that he would make himself anything other than a complete fool. He had to move on the strength of nothing more concrete, nothing more secure than trust in Jesus. And he did. He got up, he went to the pool, he went to where he had been sent. And because he did this, his life was changed. He was freed from what had been, and he began to walk as a child of the light. My friends, the promises of Christ are great, and they are sure. But so are the challenges. So are the demands. The light is real, but to move from the darkness to the light, we have to step out. We have to trust Jesus. We have to lay aside our fears. Go wherever he sends us, do what he asks us to do, and then plunge in. And that is what we do here every Sunday, every beginning of our week. We say, like that man, Lord, I believe. And we worship him.